It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Afraid here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. We are in Valley Forge. And coming up, we're going to have Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America. He's talking about, you know, he's been all around doing all kinds of sightseeing and so on. He's going to tell us all about it. We're at the 2010 Freedom Action Conference put on by Tom DeWeese. And it's been a great opportunity for us to meet and greet and talk to a lot of the people. I want to finish up with George Shepard and Gary Franchi on the use of the internet, and it's not just social networking, it's the use of the internet and social networking as a tool for a goal. And that's one thing that I've understood their goal and ours has been a lot of times a little different, you know, and I want to explain it for the audience so that they can see it's also affected the way that we have made decisions and how we've set up our pages and so on. My goal was always from the beginning something that I always wanted. I wanted a tool by which I could make use of an internet capability, a website, a resource, a research. That's why we have so many categories with so much information in there that's archived, and people can create their own special editions. They create their own categories. They create their own personas online to where they have a list of everything they've ever written by their own URL that's attached to Freedom's Phoenix so that they could share that in their emails, sig lines, with everybody. So what happens is we go, all right, so what are we going to do? We're going to go ahead and provide this resource for them to be their own activist all over the country. They get to do what they want, and it makes it easier on us, and we just control the front page, and then, of course, you know, share what everybody else is doing and promoting their activities, including, you know, Restore the Republic. And then it's just kind of its own self-fulfilling, we don't have to babysit it thing, and then we can go on to do things like the radio show and the video and a lot of our street activism and our printing and T-shirts and on and on and on and on, the activism at a Freedom's Phoenix workshop. Now, the difference is Restore the Republic, they want to have a mechanism by which they get to direct the action more. They need to be able to use it and use it like a laser beam and focus it on what they want. So, Gary, go ahead and tell us, because you can understand there's a difference there. You know, I'm more about the activists being empowered, where you want to use the activists as your power. I mean, tell me where I'm off.
Well, I would, you know, I'm not like Darth Vader, you know, like.
I don't know. I'm trying not to be.
Yeah, you will obey. No, it's more like, hey, we have activists in our network, and a lot of times they send us initiatives. And, you know, depending on, you know, whatever the initiative is, we'll shoot an email out to our members and say, take action on this issue. Perfect example. A couple of years ago, someone posted a blog entry on our site about a guy that got tortured in Canada, an American citizen. We set up a little website for him, and we told all of our members, go to the website and send an email to the State Department, to Nancy Pelosi, to all those guys. And they sent out the emails from our site that we developed for them. And we shut down the State Department from functioning on their computers for 24 hours because we bogged down their servers. I mean, there's different action techniques that we use. We ask people to call the media or, you know, fundraise or you know, send out emails or forward our magazines and videos to people to help us spread a message of viral media.
I'm, you know, go ahead and comment on it, George. I'm trying to see the long-term effectiveness Because it is a different style. It's a different technique. And you guys are really good at what you do. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan, okay? I just want to make sure that we understand that there's a power in diversity of effort, you know, in the division of labor, okay? Mm-hmm. Ours has always been a little bit different. It's out of my control a lot more than, like, Restore the Republic or your efforts are out of your control. Mine is, it's like mud thrown on the wall. I mean, you know, it's all up there. Some stuff sticks more than others. Some stuff gets more attention than others. Some things go viral more than others. It's one of the reasons for our success is because I don't try and dictate it. I get to do, this is the only rule that I have on Freedom's Phoenix. Nothing you do can have any effect on me getting to do whatever the heck it is I want to do. And Gary's been at the workshop. My biggest concern, I don't give a crap how much you use the studio, the audio, the video, the equipment and everything. But when I go and I'm looking for a drill bit, it better freaking be there. Because dang it, man, I do not want you to be able to restrict anything that I want to do. So as a publisher and the director of Freedom's Phoenix and the workshop and so on, what I do is try to make sure all the tools are where they're supposed to be. All the silk screening equipment is clean and there and done and, you know, slap around and who doesn't get to use it because they can't keep it clean. And, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's the infrastructure that I supply for them more than I try to use the infrastructure to direct something, because I think it gives you a strong beam, but it's a beam. I want more like a spotlight, you know, a big, you know, freaking solar flare. I mean, you know, it's just on everything. So, I mean, go ahead and comment on that. You know, what's the difference? Because I can see if you laser something on what you got, man, you can burn a hole through it. You can get it. You can what fur, give them what fur. So, you know, kind of what is it that you see the advancement, where your advance is in using that technique that you guys have?
Well, first thing, I think we're not that far off from the same end result.
No, we're not.
Yeah, and I agree.
We're providing tools. And if you take a look at both our websites, both our products, I mean, they're tools for people. The difference is this. Some people, they want to be active, and they don't know what to do. They don't know how. They don't know how to network with other people. Because the thing in this movement is the worst thing that could derail us is the feeling of loneliness, knowing that there's no one out there that feels the same way you do. And day in and day out, I get emails from people saying, what's going on with the movement? I mean, are there other people out there that feel this way? Everyone that I talk to, they think I'm a nut. And they won't listen to me. My family won't even listen to me anymore. I've had people break down to me on the phone and cry. I mean, we actually answer our phones when people send us emails or people call us on the phone. And it's a horrible thing to think. And some people just say, tell me what to do. I'm ready. We get these emails all the time. I'm sure Gary gets the same emails. What do we do? And we're not so much trying to direct the movement, to direct what's going on, because I believe the same principles that you do about freedom. Let the thing have its own evolution. Let it grow as it wants to grow. But we need to be able to provide tools for those people that maybe don't, they're not really adept yet to what is it that they need to do to affect change. You know, we're in a position where we have the ability to share with other people, to network those people, to make them feel like, hey, I'm not alone, that there is hope out there. I mean, real hope, not some fake Pez Lope hope that just melts in your mouth and it's gone. I'm talking about something that is going to stick around for a long time based on principles.
Well, go ahead. That's where Gary comes in, because, you know, my hope has been in just keeping breathing in and out and survive this thing that's coming. I'm not trying to save the Titanic. Everybody wants to save the ship of state. Nobody gives a crap about the people. I'm, you know, screw the ship, man. You know, create your own life raft. At least know what's coming. You know, there's an iceberg out there, and they're not steering away from it. Heck, they already hit it. They keep, you know, steaming. It's getting lower and lower in the water. Get off. So I'm not really trying to save anything or direct anybody. I just want them to understand how we got here, what the problem is, and to simply survive it. Got chickens. I mean, you know, that's my whole mantra. So, Gary, what is it you're trying to use this power to accomplish?
Well, when we built RestoreTheRepublic.net, that's the social networking website. And the initial concept that Russo had in mind, because he saw the splintering in all the organizations, he wanted to create an umbrella. You know, he wanted to bring everyone together. And that's where RestoreTheRepublic.net came in. And we developed the site to be completely organic. The users go there, they do what they want, they post, they publish, they blog, they connect, they network, they comment, they do all the things that you can do on a social networking website. They make groups, they form events, they send out mass emails to their own little groups from within the website. All we do is we have access to everybody. And we're like a rudder on a ship. We can see all the different activities going on the website, and then we'll say, okay, let's see if we can go ahead and help people, guide them along the path. That's all we do.
I know. I understand what path guided towards what end goal?
Restoring the Republic.
What if I don't want to restore the Republic? What if I'm going to take that ship of state and say, I brought a drill?
Well, then we'll just ban your IP address and kick you off the website. No, I mean, what do we want to do? We want to shut down the Federal Reserve. We want to get an end to electronic voting. We want to shut down the IRS. I mean, we have all these different initiatives that Russo left behind for us, and there's a lot of work.
It's a big job. You know, to be honest with you, people get into this movement for different reasons. You know, you have to find that thing that you're passionate about, and that's what we're trying to do is say, look, there's a lot of things that we can do. Let's connect you with the people that are passionate about the same things, and let's make
change. Go ahead and give out the web pages you guys want to. We got like 10 seconds. Do it up.
RestoreTheRepublic.net and RestoreTheRepublic.com. Plug in.
And RepublicMagazine.com.
You know, these guys, we're all on the same page. We're good friends, and we're working towards it. My only thing is I just want to be allowed to just say, I just want to take care of me.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, what's that mission here on Declare Your Independence? With me, Ernest Hancock. We got Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America here helping us out. You know, I want to find out what his mission is. Now, let's go ahead and find out. Larry, you're here, and your mission is what?
At the conference.
Yeah, your mission at the conference, your mission in life, your mission. And we've known each other for probably 15 years, man. You kind of had this focus of mission. What's it been?
To install the words shall not be infringed over every piece of federal gun control legislation.
Why? I don't. How about, you know, just eliminate the legislation?
That's what I meant.
You know, and what we have now is what? Is it a result of a cultural thing, or is it because somebody loves us? Are they trying to control us? Is it how did we get to the point where we are now? Because you would never have thought that this would have been the America that we were promised when they started this whole experiment. So I'm going, what changed? What happened that would have allowed this to happen at every level of government? I mean, you would have people up there screaming for gun control and getting votes because of it. How did that happen?
America has been pushed by the education establishment toward socialism for some time, well before FDR. There was a growing assumption that government is a legitimate way, perhaps the only way, to handle various of life's problems. That necessarily included gun control as part of that worldview. And I think we're actually seeing a reversal of that. It's not just tea parties and town halls. We've seen, for instance, USA Today had a graphic a few months ago that showed that from the years 2004 to 2009, Americans who would support a handgun ban dropped from 36% to 28%. That's a pretty big drop in a short time. We're moving in the right direction. And
why? Why would that have happened? What happened to cause that?
I think we're beginning to win the debate.
I mean, what the debate? Is it Hollywood? Is it the newspapers? Is it the internet? Is it the youth? Is it Ron Paul? Is it the Libertarian Party? I mean, you got to help me out here, man. Who's winning?
The views that the right of center in America have had for a long time were not effectively communicated. The means of that were not available to them. Well, they are now. You were just discussing with Gary and his
George,
one of the key ways that we're able to get the word out. There's a book written by Michael Patrick Leahy called Rules for Conservative Radicals. And he recounts how in a period of a week, in the run-up to April 15 last year when the first Tea Parties were held, it started out with four guys working together with Twitter and Facebook and telephone. And in a week, they had rallies across the country involving hundreds of thousands of people. And that's a tribute to the new technology that would never have, without that, we wouldn't have had a peep.
You know, you probably don't even remember this. I want to tell, I've told this story a couple of times over the years, and it involved you when you came to Arizona to speak with Sheriff Mack at the Libertarian headquarters downtown Phoenix back in 94. And I'll tell you this story. We understood what was coming. In fact, it was the beginning of Freedom's Phoenix and all this in our heads. We knew what the Internet was going to do, and it went like this. We're there, and you and Sheriff Mack come to talk about what the big issue at the time was, whether we were going to have three-day waiting periods and all that kind of stuff was going on. So there was a lot of gun control legislation going through during the Clinton years and such.
Right.
So it was always, you know, well, how reasonable are we going to be? Do we want to have, you know, any background check? Is it going to be 3 days? Is it going to be instant? Is it going to be whatever? What we found out when we've got our first email accounts, we had a group called SAFE, Second Amendment is for Everyone. My very first email account was safe@indirect.com. I remember that. Somebody got it for me. As we started communicating with other Second Amendment organizations around the country, we started finding out that at a local level, on cities, counties, states, every level there could be, it was the same kind of legislation that was being introduced simultaneously. They were rezoning cities so that you couldn't have a home-run business. Well, there went the FFLs. You know, the federal firearm licensee that could do it from his kitchen table all of a sudden, oh, I'm sorry, it has to be legal for you to do it. And we took out in the zoning, you can't do that in the city level. Sucks to be you.
And federal law, the Clinton gun ban, required that you show proof of zoning before ATF would give you a permit.
Oh, no, see, I was all connected. We could see this. But until the Internet, you know, they were able to get away with this stuff. You never knew it.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, we were finding out that this was not just a local phenomenon. It was going on everywhere at the same time. It was a concentrated march to disarm the American people.
Right.
And we understood it. So did GOA. So did NRA, but the NRA handled it differently. Oh, it's another opportunity for us to raise some money. Yeah, you could make it really bad if you added this, and then we could really raise some money. I mean, you know, that was their attitude.
Their attitude has been to look at the system as a given that can't be changed, so let's relax and work within it. That's why they've been considering this year endorsing Harry Reid, even while we've endorsed Sharon Angle early in the primary. They assume that Harry, well, he got them some pork, a $61 million shooting range in Clark County, Las Vegas, kind of a national-type facility. And they can point to three or four votes that Harry Reid cast for us, one of which was at least one, maybe two. We had about 80 votes at the time, so, hey, thanks a lot, Harry. That really helped make it over the top.
100, yeah.
Yeah. So that... is just their mindset. If you want to understand them, think of the average conservative member of Congress that goes to Washington with really decent ideas in his head, and he gets snookered into the system quickly or over a little bit of time, and after a while, not only did he forget he's supposed to be draining the swamp, he's part of the swamp.
A national Republican apologist. We have had so many battles with them over the years. They don't go to Arizona anymore. They come around, they come up against the hardcore gunnies, and we're like, don't even start with us.
Right.
So, and it's well known, NRA, stay away from Arizona.
So you're typical of much of the membership, but it's the staff in Washington that I
don't even care.
With.
Don't even care about them. Screw them. You know, we were so ignored. In 1994, right, we had a congressman that was a congressman named John Kyle that's now our U.S. Senator. NRA came in, talked of all the different gun organizations, of which, you know, they came to us. You know, we had SAFE. It was real popular, what we were doing with concealed carry and stuff then. And they came up and they said, now, look, we're going to need all you guys' help. Because they didn't know where to put libertarians. They didn't even know how to spell it. They had no idea what was a libertarian.
I'm not sure they've got the memo.
Yeah, no, they had no clue. They just knew we were big pro-gun guys. So they go in and they say, we need your support so that we can get enough signatures for Kyle to get him on the ballot and get him through. But, and they told us before the crime bill came up for a vote, they said, you know, we're going to have to let him vote for the crime bill and endorse him so that the Democrat doesn't have any, you know, thing on him. You know, they thought that that would be a loser, a big thing for him. So John Kyle votes for the crime bill, and they gave him an A-plus rating. We went around, his name's Kyle, K-Y-L, and we made up a bunch of signs, and we put them all over, and it said, Zeke Kyle, with a swastika dripping blood on it and everything. Zeke Kyle, Zeke Kyle. And we're sending, we had the Kyle urinal targets. You know, had a little concentric circles around his campaign picture, and we sprayed them with hairspray, put them in urinals, and the golden rule, the golden stream, doing the others as they would do unto you kind of thing. We were real buttheads about it. So they are just like, Kyle's calling the Libertarian candidate, make them stop, man, make them stop. We got the, we came across, one way or another, all the fax numbers, all their, that they have for all their donors and all the offices in Washington. So we're sending them copies of that urinal target, okay, in Washington. And people in Washington were getting stories of pain. Yeah, Zeke Kyle, Zeke Kyle. We're just, it was, we were relentless. The NRA gave an A-plus rating, and they never forgave him for that.
Well, that's the scenario right now with Harry Reid and Sharon Angle.
And that is my point. So where does a gun-loving, freedom-fighting individual go? Well, we're going to talk to Larry Pratt about maybe it's Gun Owners of America.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah! What are we fighting for? You know, I want to make that clear. What the heck are we fighting for? That's Queen from the late 70s, early 80s. I remember I'm in high school listening to this stuff, and it was the communication that we had at the time was music. That's how we communicated with each other. That was what, you know, hey, listen to this song, read this lyric, you know, read some Rush, you know, take a look at this, and movies and so on. But there was no direct communication, certainly with the youth at the time. They didn't have Facebook. Heck, you know, it was like, hey, I knew somebody that kind of sort of almost knew somebody that had a roommate that had a fax machine. I mean, you know, this is high technology. When Larry Pratt, the first time I met him in person, he came to Arizona and he was talking about, you know, Larry has always taken, you know, a much harder edge than even a lot of the people at GOA. I mean, you know, Larry, if you wanted to go, okay, is that really GOA's thing? Or, you know, what's, you know, so you always count on Larry to give it, you know, what for. And at the time in Connecticut, we had some libertarian activists in Connecticut in 94. They were saying, look, man, while Larry's there, make sure you tell him that there's some GOA reps here that are saying, well, we're going to advocate for as long as it's immediate background check and then this 3-day thing, well, then it'll be okay. And I'm going, Larry, somebody's saying it, you know, so what that means. No longer can you say one thing in one part of the country and something else in another. That doesn't happen anymore. And that's what's going on with the NRA. They're still in this old-timey thinking. I don't know what the heck they're thinking with this Harry Reid thing in Nevada. What the heck are they talking about?
They've endorsed Chet Edwards in Texas, a representative who voted for the Clinton gun ban. And they've endorsed him over the guy that we've endorsed, Mr. Flores, who's 100% pro-gun. Why not go with this guy in a Republican wave year when you very well could get rid of a blue dog that's really just a dog? And we've got every opportunity to really change, make some significant changes in the system. And they just want to continue the system as it is.
What system? As what is? They're just the Republican lapdogs? I mean, you know, I, what is the NRA? What is it? You know, I mean, I know what they say it is,
well,
but come on, man.
They
think
as if they're one of the members of Congress and they're part of the club. That's, and it's a very, the Bible has a proverb about if you have a liking for delicacies, you better put a knife to your throat before you sit down at the king's table to eat his. And that's just a reference to how easy it is for people to come to become enthralled with someone in power.
Okay, now here we're getting to it. I remember there were many years when I used to, like, you know, pretend like I cared what was going on in Washington and so on. I mean, you get to a certain point, you're just going, this is not going to change. I mean, after a while, you just get it, okay? Now, I know you're locked into the system advocating for gun rights and changing a culture, and there's always some, you know, a benefit in that. You know, it's changed the people, and it, all this other stuff kind of follows. Because politicians, I mean, you know, give me an amen on this. They're not leaders, they're followers.
That's correct. There's a handful that are leaders, And if we get a handful of them in there at the same time, that's really all it'll take. Majorities don't rule. It's always been minorities.
Well, you know what? We did learn. A matter of fact, we had some training. Gunners of America came to Arizona, and a lot of us went down there to talk to the gentleman. And it was something that I always remembered. They said, you know, politicians only understand two things, pleasure and pain. And you know, if there's a special interest on the other side giving them whatever pleasure kind of stuff, you're not going to outspend them. So as activists, what we understood, we can cause a lot of pain, though.
That's right.
Let me show you some pain. You want to see some pain? You feel me now? You feel me? You know, so that is.
Do you feel my pain?
I'll make you feel my pain. So this has been, you know, really what we have been effective at. And it's been so much, certainly on the Second Amendment issue. And our friend, L. Neil Smith, he's always made it very, very clear. He goes, the Second Amendment movement is this Vulcan mind meld with government. You can always tell how they really perceive you and your rights by the kind of restrictions they're going to put on you and your ability to resist them. And I'm going, oh, man, if that ain't dang Skippy. So
the area that we're seeing some considerable progress is in the states. It's the states where there was an enthusiasm this year of legislators not only to sponsor Firearms Freedom Acts, but to co-sponsor them. They would almost compete with each other as to who was going to carry the bill. To actually be rolling back gun control and have a contest among elected officials is something you don't get to see very often.
Well, it's because of a cultural shift that has been demanded by people.
Yes,
and certainly in politics. I mean, you want to get the slaves all riled up, man. Start talking about taking away their guns. I mean, they're all heck no, because they know what that really means.
Sure.
So we've done. If you come into any of our meetings, safety, like Sheriff Mack, he's familiar with this. You go there, and we have a black battle rifle. Nice, you know, good caliber on it. You'll get a good 308 Fal or something. Detachable magazine pistol grip. Black detachable magazine pistol grip. You get your color photograph taken. You stand in there. Then you can address the crowd at the podium. Then, and you know Trent Franks, okay, congressman from Arizona.
Right.
Trent Franks and I went to church together, used to be friends and so on. I just, oh, man, he's really gone down the dark side. As I look back, he always kind of was, you know. But he showed up with this thing, it looked like a 20-gauge shotgun. And I'm going, seriously? You're not going to go, oh, I can't be taken, I have a photograph taken with that. And he goes, and look at the bullet it shoots. It was a rhino gun or something, right? So it's this really big bullet. You see? It makes up for it. It's a one big bullet. I'm going,
how appropriate that it's a rhino gun.
Ooh, I never thought of that. Oh, my goodness. How much of a slacker am I to pick up on that? You know?
Very
this
nice.
This is amazing.
Well, let me just give a little kudo to the conference. We were on the podium yesterday with me was Matt Shea, a state rep from Spokane, Washington. And I mentioned something about the Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act, which, like all the other eight, says if a gun's made in the state, identified as such, and stays in the state, no federal gun laws will apply. But they went one little step farther. They said, and if a federale tries to impose federal gun law in contravention of Wyoming law, it's 365 days in jail. Now, that's good as far as it goes. Because that certainly would be a chilling effect on taking away some of the fun of arresting a buyer who didn't have a background check when he bought a gun in Wyoming. But if you make it 366 days, and here's where Matt Shea was taking notes, then that's the federal threshold for when you start losing your gun rights. Even if you never spend a day in jail, if the conviction could have put you in jail for 366 days, you lose your gun rights. And the way I would envision this working is we don't want to pay to incarcerate you. Just we've convicted you. Now give us your gun. You're finished as a cop.
If you don't get your gun rights, you can't be a cop.
Bye-bye.
Got it. That's good.
That can be put in the Virginia health nullification law. If they try to get the sheriff to impose a lien on somebody's property, right now he's prohibited from doing it, but he ought to be able to put him in the can for 366 days, or at least potentially. That is the same. I was talking to the state delegate that came up with the Virginia law, and I said, well, but they can still get it at our funds because they'll be in the bank, and all they need is a computer measure, and they can just draw the funds right out of the bank. They don't even have to come physically. He said, I've been working on that. He said, I have a bill in this year, and I'll have it in next year, to set up a state bank. And this bank will be totally outside the federal system. There's one like it in North Dakota. And a banker advised me to make sure that his measure would provide for a depository institution, not a fractionally reserved type of institution. And then it'll operate just like a credit union. My guess is it's going to have most of the money of all the depositors in the state, because who doesn't want to be immune from the man?
And they can come, just come take it. Well, you know, that's one thing.
And the sheriff will be there at the bank door with the posse to make sure they don't go in.
Oh, see, I see where this is going. You know, because it was it North Dakota, South Dakota with the bank? It was North Dakota?
North Dakota. Buddy.
North Dakota, that was one thing. If you looked at a graph or a map of the country, they had the lowest unemployment. They had the lowest state debt, if any debt. They had all the bennies of the, you know, being able to survive this thing because they chose not to be inside the system.
Right.
And I'm going, and that's also up there with the Lakota Nation kind of stuff going on, too. Might have rubbed off a little bit of little Russell Means going on.
The state bank that we're talking about is not going to be making any loans called toxic assets or subprime. They're going to be very cautious, and they'll be profitable.
Nothing's going to surprise me. You know, nothing is going to surprise me. The changes, dramatic changes in what's going to happen in this country and the realizations of individuals and the youth. But I'm just, is it in time to save what? Are we going to save something? Or are we just going to let the Titanic go down? And
it's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, all you got to do is just, let the talking heads just yakety, 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 yak, and they'll implant whatever ideas they want in your head. It's really easy. If you know the rules, you know the game, you just lay back and, let us think for you. Well, one of the people that is making sure that you think for yourselves, Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America, has focused on one issue, the right to keep and bear arms. But is that it, Larry? I mean, is that as far as we're going? I mean, what is it you're really trying to do? Is it everybody, all the infants should be issued their own AK at birth or something? I mean, what is it you're really after?
Well, that would be a nice way to get started in life.
That wouldn't bother me none.
But no, what we're after, obviously, we know that the Second Amendment cannot survive under socialism. Never has, never will. We're heading in that direction. We got a lot of socialism already in this country. That's got to all be pushed back. We can't live free, either as gun owners or as free men, in that kind of an environment. And so we're all about, in the little area that we're working, we want to get rid of everything that's there that's not supposed to be there. Shall not be infringed means nothing is supposed to be there. Nothing. And we've actually got one justice now that's got it right. In the concurring opinion on the Chicago decision, Justice Thomas actually rendered an independent opinion that I don't know whether he ever read ours or not, but it basically tracked with what we were saying. And we were trying to get across to the court that judges have invented this fantasy that they can fiddle around with rights through a level of scrutiny. And strict scrutiny, they'll respect it somewhat more than whatever the lowest level might be.
Yeah, state interest, compelling state interest, this, all these levels of legal mumbo-jumbo.
And it's mumbo-jumbo. And our argument was, no, the Constitution, actually, the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment, provides the level of scrutiny that you're supposed to use. Shall not be infringed. And Thomas gets it. So we got one down and eight to go. Well, actually, four. You get a majority with five. So
no, the fact that these decisions go 5-4, that's scary right there. And then we've had two justices appointed by Obama, and we're supposed to feel good about this?
And all the more important then that the states are beginning to be pushed into 10th Amendment exercises here, there. You know, if I were in the West, I would be big time for bulking up the sheriff with the posses and then making it illegal for the BLM to enforce their laws at hammer ranchers. And if they try, well, they're just going to be a guest of the taxpayer of Antelope County, whatever it is.
Well, we have, you know, there's another trend going the other way. You know, and you see it in Arizona. A lot of people, I'm sure you have an opinion about the SB 1070 immigration thing and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you haven't actually read the law, you know, you don't know what's in there. We have. I mean, we're going, I mean, it's the first sentences. The Arizona legislature finds compelling interest in the cooperative enforcement of federal immigration laws throughout Arizona. Well, it goes on from there and it says you're considered to not be here illegally if you provide law enforcement with your papers. So I'm going, oh, this is bad. Because in the first sentence, compelling interest is what? Individual rights or something? No, it's up for interpretation. Then they're begging for local law enforcement of federal laws, cooperative enforcement. Fusion centers. And you remember during the Clinton administration, there was crime bill stuff and everything, all this multi-jurisdictional task force stuff that was going on. The same people screaming for immigration controls and all this stuff were freaking out under the Clinton administration, this multi-jurisdictional task force thing. And now they're begging for it.
Yeah.
And I'm going, you know, it's so wrong what's going on.
Well, there's something else that wasn't read, the Constitution. It says that in cases involving a state, the court of original jurisdiction is the Supreme Court.
And they didn't go there.
They didn't go there. Everything's wrong about the thing.
It's not about immigration. It doesn't say one thing about the border. Doesn't put any troops or any law enforcement on the border. Doesn't do any, it wasn't about that. It was about national ID. It always was, with the people that were always for that, and that's been advocating it since the 90s. Russell Pierce was behind Prop 200, and anybody that went to local government for any beneficiary, you had to have ID that cleared that you were a U.S. citizen. I'm like, why does that have anything to do with it? You know, and it's this national ID thing. So I'm just...
What would prevent the state from building the bloody wall?
Well, I don't know. The federal government, probably. But, I mean, you know... And
then maybe that's when the sheriff needs a better posse.
See, this is my point. You know, we got to be careful, you know, that we're asking for what? We're asking for more powerful, intrusive state government to trump federal government that's not powerful, intrusive enough.
I would like to see the sheriffs bulked up and empowered to put federales in jail. That will not be growing state power.
Well, you know, the reason I think it would be a net benefit in the future is because the sheriff is more locally controlled.
Absolutely.
And for no other reason, you know, and if I'm going to have... Somebody's going to trump somebody with their bigger, badder badge.
I want to be able to trump him.
Exactly. I want him to be right here. I'll take care of, you know,
exactly.
My own, as opposed to having the bigger, badder badge from the federal. But then we look back in the South throughout the civil rights era, and you have, well, we've got to bring in the federal troops, you know, to get them locals to, you know, be nice to minorities.
Interesting. What actually provoked the feds to send the troops in was the Deacons for Defense, men originally, but not exclusively by any means, from the black churches who organized pickup self-defense operations.
Absolutely.
And when a few of the Klansmen got shot, in self-defense, but got shot, man, it wasn't as much fun to night ride or to hassle little girls at lunch counters.
Absolutely, absolutely. And gun control started as a racist thing anyway. You had all these freed slaves that now have equal rights and to firearms. And they go, oh, heck no. We need to get a permit from the local white sheriff to say whether you get to have a gun.
That's exactly
right. Then here come the marriage licenses. Well, can't have black and white people intermarrying. We got to have the government involved in marriage contracts now. And I'm like...
What the heck, man? So I don't see government itself as the solution to stuff. It always winds up being more of the problem. So I'm going, what's it supposed to do? Well, defend individual rights.
Exactly.
Well, how's that
That's
working
the sheriff.
Out?
He's called
okay,
the sheriff.
Okay, I keep hearing more and more and more. I've been at this for 22 years, Larry, and you've been around longer than that. And I'm, you know, it's always one more thing, one more hope, one more try, one more. So the sheriff thing, if this, doesn't go and they just squash down the sheriffs and say, guess what, we got bigger guns, you know, then what?
They can't fight the whole country, Ernie. The way that the Real
they can't
ID,
fight the individuals.
The Real ID Act was killed when a dozen states said, we'll put our bureaucrats in jail before you get the information you want for the national
Oh, party. Yeah? Then they pass SB 1070 in the name of immigration, and now it is illegal to restrict the flow of that information to Janet Napolitano right now by Republicans that beg for this thing. Begged for it. And when the federal court said, oh, it's unconstitutional, you can't do any of this stuff from the point that the officer comes in contact with the public, they go, okay, well, that's we can't do that part. But guess what? All the rest of it was good and the data got transferred. Yay.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so warm and fuzzy. But then they say, oh, but this is not to be construed that we will apply any of the Real ID Act of 2005. I go, yeah, what about the ones after that, you know? But it didn't matter because they had the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative enhanced driver's licenses, which was already done. And I'm going, and why do you think Janet Napolitano, head of the Gestapo, signed that thing about the Real ID anyway? Because she already had it. This is so much BS. And I'm telling you, you and I have been through this over the past 15 years and dealing with the Second Amendment and going through this with the Kyle thing, mm-hmm. you know, NRA, you know, A-plus ratings. You know, when they came to the Libertarians later, right after that election, 95, I think it was, we were running for city council, and they, of course, had to give, you know, us an A-plus rating. I mean, you know, we were all hardcore more than them. But they were mad because we wouldn't advocate for the building of shooting ranges using taxpayer money. They go, well, they get midnight basketball. Shouldn't we be able to fund gun ranges? And we're going, heck no. They go, well, we can't in good conscience give them because we don't agree with them on other issues, whatever it is. So we give them an L rating. And we're going, cool. That's all we ever want from you. What, A-plus rating you give to Kyle? I want an A-plus rating? I want my freaking L rating. And that's all I'll accept from you guys.
That's good. No, it's never occurred. It doesn't bother the NRA that with money comes control because they were formed after the war between the states by Northern officers who were not happy with the marksmanship of the average Northern recruit. And so they set up the NRA as basically a marksmanship program to help prepare future soldiers.
Gavin Appleseed thing.
Exactly. And they always looked at themselves as a handmaiden of government. And so they accepted, they wanted to tweak, but they accepted the 34 Act and the 38 Act, the machine gun and the licensing of dealers, and all the way along the line. And one of their presidents, whoever it was in 1968, said the NRA has always supported reasonable gun control.
Oh, so this is, you know, before we go, we're going out, we got a minute here, you know, give out, what's the main issue we should be working on now? The sheriff thing, is that your focus?
The sheriff and the Firearms Freedoms Act. Get yourself on our email alert list. Go to gunowners.org and sign up for it there. That's a freebie. Then you'll get embedded email that you can fire off to the appropriate legislator or member of Congress, as the case may be.
Gunowners.org. And that's another thing, your maps of legislators and how and all the communication with and the information that gunowners.org has there. I've used that a lot of times.
Very handy.
So gunowners.org. And how do they go? What do they click on to get to that legislator map? What do they call that?
Go to the Action Center, and then you can see in the
Action Center.
Yeah.
You go to the Action Center and gunowners.org. You will find that in a very, very effective tool for a lot of things.
Yes.
Hey, it's been great, you know, spending time with you, Larry, and it's been great having
Thank you, Ernie.
Being here at the conference.